That was Fontaines DC on Radio 191 FM. My microphone's suddenly working.
Now you're picking out. Everyone's doing the thing at the moment, don't you?
Yeah. Apologies to everyone who heard us for the last 10 minutes where
something happened.
My microphone was just broken. It decided to have a hissy fit and everybody was really quiet.
Yeah, and I was talking shit about Fontaines DC. I think
they're about to perform like in March.
Really?
Yeah.
Really. I love that band so much. I think I had such high expectations going into their concert that I was a little let down because I had been listening to perfect production in my eyes or ears.
And then
seeing them live, I just was. Yeah.
It's not on the record!
Exactly. Yeah. Which is kind of such a lame thing to,
But I understand. But sometimes it's just... and sometimes, like, if the band isn't connecting or it's just you happen to see them on a day that they're not at their best, it's easy to get.
I think that's also the thing. It's like, you know, when you're on a tour and there's 30 dates back-to-back every day, you probably just get so drained. But that is an indicator for my love for music. It's like... I remember seeing Big Thief live. I'd heard of them and I liked them, but I wasn't like a huge fan. And I went and saw them live, and they were just so much better live than they were recorded, and it just made me insane. Like just fall in love.
I've had that with a few different bands where I've gone, oh yeah, they're pretty cool, and you're like, oh my god, the live thing is insane.
Yeah.
Auckland was kind of an interesting place to see bands, like especially on the beginning of their career, because Auckland would often be either the last or the very first part of their tour, and sometimes the last one's awesome because they're just like, ah, oh, cool, now we let rip and we just have a party and have an awesome time, or they'd be really, really tired.
Yeah.
Like, notoriously, Nirvana played in Auckland just before Kurt passed away, and it was terrible. It was a terrible gig because they were just tired, exhausted, and fucking over it. So it's kind of interesting being at the end of a tour, but I imagine people are wanting to perform their best in New York because that's a big audience.
Definitely.
And you know, anyway,
it was the second night, so maybe that had affected.
Sometimes second nights can be a bit
I don't know.
Interesting.
Alright, I had a question as a radio host, but as a radio listener, do you have any like really distinct memories, maybe even growing up or just, you know, recently, from like some interesting radio moment that happened / you calling in? Have you ever called it? Like, have you ever done that?
No.
I've
texted into Radio 1.
Oh, texted?
Yeah, yeah. I used to text into... Oh, no, I did call in once. Yeah, I did call in once to BFM before I was a part of it. My favourite memory from when I first heard BFM, I just moved to Auckland. I was living with your dad and Suzanne when he was with your older brother Joe's mum. And I turned it on and... the host was so blazed that they played the song and then they picked up the needle and then started it again and just played the same track 3 times, and I just was like, this is glorious. I think it was like Portishead or something like that, and it was the funniest thing
that's awesome.
I'd ever heard, and I was like, I understand this. And just the looseness of it, I was like so on board.
What about you, Stan?
Yes.
I was obsessed with, I was telling you, Tina, I was obsessed, or I am obsessed with NPR, and there has been a couple instances where I've called in and either made rants or tried to make jokes, and it's pretty much 90% of the time gone pretty horribly, but it's kind of sick, you know, like, because you have to talk to the person before you get on the show, like, who, like, kind of just, like, I don't know, monitors whether or not what you're about to say, kind of is the editor of the show, and like kind of edits it, whether or not you're gonna be good or something,
or a
dick. And I don't know, I feel like that for one is an interesting job to have, like, you probably get some weird interactions. Right?
Yeah, you would, especially with something as big as NPR. That probably would be your job, filtering.
What do you rant about?
Oh, you know? No, just because, you know, there's just what is it called? Topics that are very of the net. What the fuck is the word? I'm looting my vocabulary just destroyed.
It's
now
because you're on air.
Yeah.
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 Events
that are happening currently.
The zeitgeist.
Current events.
Yeah, there's just current event ish of things, and I'll call in about that. I can't think of a specific. There was one, I think, regarding like my school, like, or like it was about like New York public schools.
Oh yeah.
And I like talked in and just had like about a 15-minute like just like no. It was a back and forth with this guy who was talking about like basically moving money from a lot of the art programs and making more college college level classes in high school, and I was just like, what the why would you need that? Like,
yeah,
like my high school at the time had gotten rid of woodworking, and I was so pissed about that. I was so mad. I was like, what the fuck? Like, the year I got to high school, I was like, they got rid of woodwork. I was like, that's an essential thing that, you know, maybe I want to be a carpenter, you know?
Yeah, maybe you want to get, like, tools. Yeah, it's a good thing to know how to make a pencil case. Yeah, understood.
Yeah.
New Zealand got rid of media studies.
What?
The first 2 years that you could take media studies. And I was like, that seems like a crucial thing in the 2020s that would be weird to take away.
Yeah.
You know, that's an interesting one to cut.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Well.
Right.
Ice cream, is it good in America? Because when I went to Australia, the ice cream was significantly worse than when it was like in New Zealand.
Interesting. Okay, so the American chocolate and ice cream is horrible. Absolutely
horrible.
Disgusting.
And
I think it's a near and dear topic for me because coming to coming to Australia and then also New Zealand, less so New Zealand probably just because of the nostalgia factor of coming to Australia having like the ice cream that I grew up with and like the flavor. Oh my gosh, like I don't know, they don't have it here. Maxibon, you know what Maxibon's
are?
What the hell, guys, you're missing out. Maxibon's so good.
Okay, next time I'm going to Melbourne soon, so I will make sure that I get some Maxibon.
And they got the Golden Gay Times.
Oh, I do love a Golden Gay Times.
I love a Golden Gay Times.
I think they have
a
kind of an equivalent here of that.
It's like the Rocky
Road. I love a Rocky Road. What's that other, the Sunset? I think we do have
it. And I don't think they have some burping. They don't have it here. Splices? You know what that
Splices
is?
Splices are amazing. Yeah,
dude,
we did have them for ages.
Oh my gosh.
I don't think we've got them anymore.
It's like a lime, pineapple lime icing on the outside of a vanilla popsicle.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Holy
so good.
Shit,
so you get the, it's a bit like your top. It's very zesty with creamy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you just call me zesty and creamy?
I did. That's exactly what I called Jenny Lily.
It's the trans fats in the chocolate in America.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Yeah. It's also the way that they farm cows.
Probably. Totally.
Badly.
Yeah.
Badly. And they're not grass-fed. So in New Zealand,
the milk here is better.
Oh, God, yeah. And the butter.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And cheese. The cheese made my friend, when she went to America the first time, cry. Because
really?
It's so orange.
Interesting.
And tasteless, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm very passionate about it. I hate Hershey's, Cadbury.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Both
mm-hmm.
big company, whatever. But I don't know. The Cadbury just has it.
I'm
going
to give you some Whittaker's to take.
Oh, Whittaker's is amazing as well.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah,
all right,
yeah.
Cool.
Peanut slab.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not. I prefer others.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
There is a lot of different flavors. I was surprised by that as well.
Yeah.
Very.
It's because everyone was like, this Cadbury sucks now. And so Whittaker's was like, it's our time.
Hey.
Let's just go hide. Let's have
Hershey's,
like 20 different flavors.
Mm-hmm. Hershey's tastes like plastic. Like
mm-hmm.
it tastes like a machine made
Sheen.
It.
Sheen made it.
No,
out
a machine.
Of the shop.
A machine.
Oh, right. I thought you were talking about the store Sheen. The real cheap ass store.
Yes.
Anyway.
Sheen chocolate.
Stan, you're an actor.
Mm.
What's the worst part about being an actor?
The worst part?
Yeah.
There's not a lot of immediacy. Like, there's a lot of waiting around and slash as much creative control as you have on the day of like a shoot. Like when you're actually in the scene, like you control the whole thing. But then as soon as the they yell cut, like, it's all, it's just kind of out of your power. Like, you can, you, you can talk to the director and all that all you want, but the way you're edited, like, you could have a scene and you thought you did great, and then you'll see it in the final cut, and they've, you know, completely cut around everything that you thought was good.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, and at the end of the day, it's not your decision. You know, you just go out there and try and do your best. So that's can be like the best and the worst part of it is like it's out of your hands a little bit, and yeah.
I would have thought it would have been the constant rejection.
that is very hard as well.
Yeah,
I would. Yeah, it is. But you kind of just have to. That's like part of the job.
Yeah.
Like, you have to like get over that. I think the main reason why. Not the main reason, but one of the reasons why a lot of actors get don't become whatever. Like, don't have longer careers is just because the amount of rejection and just not being able to just continue. You know, there's people who like
I can get that
who just take 10 years of rejection and they just can't handle it anymore, which is totally fair. And they, you know, some people don't have the ability to, like, financially or whatever, you know, the means in some fashion. But if, you know, you see a lot of stories of people who have been working for 20 years and then they finally get their break, and it's just kind of persistence a little bit, and obviously luck and a whole other bunch of stuff. But yeah. Persistence is a big deal, I think. And
absolutely.
Rejection is horrible, but there's ways to
deal,
I think.
Yeah. Having good family around you helps.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Support system.
I'm going to take credit for all of that.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, sure. Shall we have another song and then come back?
This was your request, Stan.
Yes.
What's the song?
Is this Benjamin Booker?
Yes.
Yeah, this is... he actually just has a new album that just came out like a week ago, I think. This is off one of his older albums. Amazing guitarist and singer. I believe from New Orleans. But he lives in Australia now. Anyway, Benjamin Booker. Amazing, amazing.
Here it is. Cool. On Radio 1. We're back. Radio 1, 91 FM. That was Benjamin Booker with Believe. I'm joined in the studio by Tina Simons and Stan Simons.
Wow.
That's my actual radio voice.
It is.
Tranquil.
Tranquil.
Thank
very
you.
Soothing.
Yes.
I loved that track.
It's
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, real good. I like a bit of soul influence kind of.
Yeah. I like
Brit.
I like the message. It's like the lyrics are really great, and they're kind of about, I don't know, at least my take was just how everyone needs, as the song says, something to believe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No matter what, it's just cool.
Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Thanks for that. It's always nice to discover something new, eh?
Yeah. He's got a new album out. It's good.
Cool.
Just check it.
Sweet. Well, done.
Cool. Voice break over.
Yeah.
Lily, do you have pertinent filmography questions for Stan?
Yeah, probably.
She does a film show on the station.
Filmography every Friday, 2 to 3 PM, and it gets podcasted at r1.co.nz.
Amazing.
Just
very
in case anybody wants to know.
That was
a film question. Who's the best director you've worked with? That's an actual question.
That I've worked with.
Yes.
Well, that I've worked with, there's a lot of actually smaller directors I could shout out, you know, but I guess the best set experience I've had an interaction with a director would be, Sean Durkin, who directed, the last film that has come out. That I was a part of, which was called The Iron Claw, and he's an English American Canadian director, and he's done a lot of great stuff. The reason why he was so fun to work with was because of his ability to make you feel comfortable,
mm-hmm.
and just allows.
Well, it's a very vulnerable film, so I can imagine, like, acting wise, the comfortability is something you seek out in that kind of environment.
Yeah, mm. yeah. I think it was the role of a director when you've got to set like the day of, like, hopefully most stuff has been sorted out already, and you're just there to just be a manager and like get everyone into the right spot. And I think he was very good at gracefully just telling everyone nicely what, you know, or just nudging them to do, because he'd already got a bunch of amazing people, collaborators who are all really good at their own jobs respectively,
mm-hmm.
and I think he could just kind of relax a little bit and then just nudge them slightly based on what he needed from them on that specific, and then it's also a lot of problem solving, and I think being a good communicator when it comes to that is vital. Yeah. And it was great, because whenever I needed to know something, I'd ask. Whenever I wasn't filming, I was on set like with him, and he was like totally cool with me like just being in like Video Village with him, like watching the monitor and me studying like everyone and just asking questions, and whenever I would do something that he didn't necessarily, or like the direction he gave was always very like subtle, and it was good, because I would do something and he would just come up to me and just be like, give you like a small little note, like, oh, just a little less there, and like he would trust you, which was like a really good feeling to have, and it allowed us to just kind of do not have free reign by any means, but like just to try things, you know.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I think creating a set environment like where people are comfortable and can do their thing is one of the most integral things in directing, from my opinion. Even with comedy, you've got to give space and create, and I feel like this is the same with musicians, right? You just have to make an environment and like take care of all the stuff that's going to be distracting, which is why, I don't know whether you remember that controversial thing with Christian Bale losing his mind and screaming at someone.
Yeah.
I had so many arguments with people. I was like, well, he was like, I understand, he'd worked himself up into this thing to play that particular character. Mm. And then someone's fuck-assing around behind you. Of course that's going to spill out.
Yeah.
And of course that's. And that was up to the director to make sure that by the time the actor is ready to blow, everything's in place.
Yeah.
So that stuff. So, I got into a lot of arguments with people about, in defense of Christian Bale, basically.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think it was that much of a dick. I completely understood why you would lose your mind in that particular space.
Totally. I don't disagree. I also, to play devil's advocate to that, is like, as an actor, I know from my own experience, you know, we're a bit of, we can be drama queens, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
and
yes, you kind of expect it,
but you're expected to be.
Yeah,
like you have to be. The ego.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, yeah. It's definitely. Like, how else are you going to get there? You're not going to get someone that's got a robust like filter, and like that's the hardest thing about acting, and what put me off acting was that I wasn't willing to put myself in the hands of other people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wasn't willing to let that outer shell. My analytical part of my brain just couldn't let go of that, and you have to be able to do that as an actor. That's what makes you good.
Anyway.
100%. Yeah. I mean, totally. I mean, I don't know the specific situation. I know it was on Terminator Salvation 2009.
Oh, yes, it was. Yeah, wow, that was fucking amazing.
But I don't know what the specific situation was in that scenario, but I will say this, like, I've done a lot of PAing and, like, you know, just being on set, and, like, if a big time actor came up to me and like, even if I, you know, even if I was like not doing a good job and I kept doing a bad job, like hopefully I would be doing a good job, but like I personally could never do that to someone on a set.
I know just what you're saying as well. There is a line.
I couldn't.
Like, yeah. There is a line.
Like, you're working, you know. It's like, I mean,
yeah,
I think that's
working.
The reason. I think that's the reason why he probably got so upset, is because he's working and this person is supposed to be doing their job well. But I don't know if I could
lose
my shit like that. That was a lot, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah.
But, you know, shout out Christian Bale. What a legend.
I mean,
shout
it's kind of crazy to do that on a Terminator film. is like the biggest thing.
I know, because it's not like you're really, yeah, anyway.
You know, this isn't...
Yeah.
But he is a stage actor.
Yes, he is.
And to play devil's advocate to that, as I could imagine, like, all the acting I've done has been on stage. Mm. And when you're that kind of actor, like, yes, you're so in the moment, mm-hmm, and you're breaking, exactly, out of that is, like, dangerous, because you're breaking out of your... the whole thing that you've just built up.
Yeah.
I would probably get... I'd at least get grouchy. I might not, like, have a tantrum, but I would get sassy.
I've been on some like, pretty, like tumultuous sets.
Yeah.
And it can get really hairy, because, you know, it's long hours. Like, people don't realize how long you're actually on the set for. Sometimes it can be, like, night shoots as well.
Yeah.
Like, people's emotions just get crazy when they have lack of sleep and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just how it is. And it's sad that that's, like, the base rate a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, you know, like, most sets I've been on, there's, like, a couple incidents where it's just, like, something goes wrong. Because it's, like, it's a small, confined space. You're working with these people every day for, like, a month, like, for long hours, you know.
Yeah.
Stuff happens.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, let's face it. Like, we're in a small office. Same.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're all a lot of creative people all in one small space.
I lose my mind at Logan.
She does.
We do. We have arguments, and Christina will come in and be like, what are you two yelling about? Because we just start, like, going at each other.
They're like siblings.
It's awesome. It's
it is like brothers to there. Do you have a dream project? Like something you could, if you could pick it from air, if it was, like, an adaptation or something that, and an idea that you had that you would want to see come true?
It's hard to say that with, like, film, because, I mean adaptation of a book, maybe, you know, like, it's, like, it's hard with theater, you know, like, you can, there's been plays, and they have different runs of different plays, but as far as, like, film, I don't know. I like to write a lot as well, and there is a couple of things where I'm like, from a writer's perspective, oh, if I could get the rights to that, that'd be so sick to, like, make that, and then like, hopefully, like, you know, act in it as well.
Yeah.
But as far as an acting, I don't know.
Well, then, from a writer's point of view, what would you want to?
There's a lot of. I've been heavily into Philip K. Dick. He's kind of a sci-fi writer.
Yeah.
But, like, it's, like, very grounded sci-fi, and there's a lot of Philip K. Dick books that have been made into movies already. Mm-hmm. You know, like Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Is based on one of his books. And a bunch of other ones, but he has a lot of short stories that I don't think get a lot of love. I think people kind of hate on his short stories a little bit.
Short stories are perfect for a feature film.
Yeah.
Like, to me, a novel is a series, a TV series, and a short film is the perfect format.
Yeah.
Because it's more complete. Like, the problem with adapting novels is that it's too long.
Mm.
You know, like, you just don't have the character development time.
Yeah.
That you do in television.
Yeah.
No, anyway.
I agree.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I think there is room for some. I mean, there's a lot of sci-fi, but the reason why I love Philip K. Dick so much is because he kind of just, his world building is so good. Like, he'll like have a sci-fi world, but then it's just, like, grounded characters who are, you know, just having normal day-to-day experiences in this other world.
Yeah.
That is so interesting.
That period of time is really interesting for psychological sci-fi. You know, like, it's that period of time is the advent of a lot of people understanding psychology as well. And that's why the early Star Trek, as cheesy as it is actually, the concepts are kind of cool, because it's talking about how we function as humans.
Yeah.
And the best sci-fi and the best horror actually talks about, to me, bigger things.
It's like the two biggest genres that... I knew study media studies. You're just like, they're just soaked in theory. You know, like, you can just go into it and into it and into it and into it. And it's so, because those are two of the first genres to ever exist as well. Like, that was what cinema was immediately born into.
Mm.
You've just got this whole history of it, and it's super interesting. Cool. And especially when it comes from books, because books are inherently kind of more psychological anyway.
Yeah.
And their analysis. And then putting it to film, it's like you've got the written theory and written psychology point of view, plus the visual medium adding to that point of view.
Yeah.
Like, all, like, the, you know, you can say Freud and all of that kind of stuff coming out, and the sci-fi imagery.
Yes.
That is specific to the screen rather than specific to the writing.
I think one of the reasons I love Philip K. Dick as well is because he has, in most of his story, a lot of his stories, he integrates drugs, philosophy, and some sort of religion. Like, he'll go into like The Man in the High Castle, which is about like World War II, if the Nazis and the Japanese won. He talks about the I Ching, which is like this old like Chinese religious text, it's an integral part of the story.
Cool.
And that was really interesting to me. And yeah, like a lot of philosophies, like the Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which is the Blade Runner book. There's like he creates his own like little like religion inside of it, and there's a huge psychological like section of the book that is about this religion that is so, it's kind of confusing and awesome, and it's not in the Blade Runner movies at all, and couldn't be probably. You know, because it was
anyway. Ursula Le Guin, who I can't remember the name of the book, but it's just completely about a non-gendered species of humans that like have evolved past the need for gender, and it's got all of these very like complicated dynamics and everything that lots of theorists have argued with her about, but she's just kind of like, get off my back, essentially. But even like something like that, that is so much more about the human
condition
that then when you put it onto screen, it's harder. That kind of thing I find harder. It's like the cult thing you were talking about. That's a harder thing to get across.
She has a short story, I think, that I read ages ago, but it's about this perfect town or a perfect city, and like everything about it is so good, and there's no crime, there's no nothing, it's only happiness and abundance, and everyone loves each other, and the only way that is a functioning society like that is because there's this one little girl, a little child, I don't know if you know if it's a girl or a boy, but they're stuck in this like little like room, and they're like suffering immensely for this whole town to be jubilant and loving and awesome, and it's like would they take this like this child suffering to be happy or not, you know?
Oh, that's brutal. Oh, I love it. It's such a good concept.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oy vey.
I don't know how we got there from the question you asked. I don't remember the question.
That was it was organic. That was organic podcast conversation.
That was indeed. We're basically Seth Rogen in here.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with the looking, I mean, listeners can't see, but like the looking over the desk that we're currently doing, and they're like leaning back in the chair. I do feel like I should have a
cigarette.
A joint?
No, they do. Neither of those.
She's holding her cigar. Two fingers up.
A cigar.
Oh, cigar? Oh, yeah. Okay. Understood.
That'd be one of the three.
Well, yeah. I thought cigar was more.
That's what I was trying to do.
Oh, okay.
My hands are small.
Sorry, people. You're not seeing the visuals on that. Yeah.
That was a Radio 191 event podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.